Welcome to the ANews podcast. This is episode 70 for June 29th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org.
Editorial. Sports. By Rocinante. This week, we're taking a closer look into the world of sports and anarchism. Across the newspaper headlines for the past few weeks has been coverage of the World Cup of soccer taking place in Russia. Outside of the USA and around the world, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world, and its game of soccer, the most popular. It's taking place in Russia this year, which has also been in the anarchist news headlines for repression of anarchists and dissidents there. It should be obvious that anarchists are against the spectacle of sports on this level, the governments, corporations, and corruption inherent in such things. One example of anarchist opposition to the world of sports comes from the text, "The Olympics, a reflection of a society under capitalism," by Anonymous. It says that the Olympics are little more than a display of nationalistic pride and flag waving by nations who co-opt efforts of athletes to further their own schemes. And then the text calls for an anarchist Olympic Games to be held in 2020. I'm not sure what events there would be. That's another discussion, but they would be a games that will surely highlight mutual aid over competition, solidarity over nationalism, and equality over crass commercialization. On the more anarchist playing field, sports have played an important aspect of radical culture. Recently, in a very informal IRC survey of participants' favorite anarchist sports, they listed sex, brick throwing, running down the walls, capture the flag and other neighborhood citywide games a la Crime Think, protest, attack, video games, and Antifa. Apparently, it was also mentioned that the Japanese have contests for flipping tables and book ripping. Anarchist and anti-fascist football clubs are popular worldwide, but especially in Europe, it seems. The Situationist, Asger Jorn, came up with a variation of soccer called three-sided football, which is played by some. Other than Jeff the Snowman Monson, of mixed martial artist fame, I'm hard-pressed to name any famous anarchist athletes other than perhaps Woody Harrelson in the 1990s movie White Men Can't Jump, as Wikipedia lists him as an anarchist, although it also mentions that he supports the 9/11 truth movement. The Colorado Avalanche of the National Hockey League, NHL, takes home the award for sports team unknowingly having anarchist symbol as their logo. Curiously, in Fifth Estate number 392, they published a text on the anarchist origins of golf by Joseph Winogrand, which makes an argument for golf originally as an anarchist sport of sorts. Certainly, the abuse of land, water use, chemicals, corporate-sized tournament purses, and exorbitant greens fees, its feigned air of exclusivity and aristocracy of golf today are far from these anarchist roots. In the recent intriguing text, Maximum Potential, by Max Rez, they examine the idea of anarchists doing fitness. Accordingly, much of the current writing on such things is centered around the Antifa crowd, and they take a look at the Haymaker Gym in Chicago, which is, quote, an attempt to create a radical culture of fitness and self-defense, unquote. The Haymaker thinks of the body as, quote, the most intimate of material forces, unquote, and, quote, as a tool for revolution and strength as a means by which to change the world, unquote. Max Rez concludes that it is worth further considering what anarchist fitness could look like when not motivated by revolutionary goals or a defense mentality. Certainly, these ideas of anarchists doing fitness and their relationship to sports is an exciting area to consider in the toolbox of anarchism. Back to the news. The television channel flickers and the reporter reads the World Cup scores aloud. Colin Kaepernick still isn't on an NFL team yet, mostly for kneeling during the national anthem, which, with backing from Trump, the NFL will now penalize teams for such actions. Meanwhile, Kaepernick has been seen out supporting IWOC, or the IWW effort behind incarcerated workers and prison abolition. NBA stars like LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, and Chris Paul rally around social issues like Black Lives Matter and gun violence. The NFL cares and frequently puts in players and teams doing community service ops and has teams wear special military pride uniforms some weekends. The spectacle of popular culture and sports grinds on as your favorite player signs a multi-million dollar contract, an even larger Nike shoe endorsement. See you in the streets.
June 29th, 2018. Welcome to a new segment on the A News Podcast that sounds like a previous segment on the A News Podcast, but since the secret is to really begin, I just keep starting over again like someone who can't tell the difference between a misunderstanding and a disagreement. Now, for your weekly assertion. A segment where the only evidence required is the unique, or not the unique, or however that works. Anarchists might not be good at changing things, but one thing we are really good at is telepathy. You see, someone that doesn't matter once said that you become what you read. And the act of sharing written words with one another is to practice the art of telepathy. I tell you not to think of a blue tree, and you do or don't because you're a real mental warrior, and regardless of time or space, there, that blue warrior sits. And so I have copied an image directly from my brain and pasted it into yours. The wild is a place of chaos where serendipity is the only truth. In the wild, there is no control, no authority, no immortal creation, and no immortal destruction. To place laws on the wild is to make the wild no more. Because there are no clear rules in the wild, and should you observe one, it may suddenly vanish. In the wild, there is no clear beginning, and there is no clear end. To pick up on the ambiguous indicators that we are moving from one perception to another are based entirely on the competency of those who live in the wild. These wild ones know that truth is like so many other words, a jargon bomb built as a wild prank upon those who live in the gray. To survive the wild, we proceed with good faith. With no truth, we ask more precise questions. To make judgments in the wild without asking questions, we tread on dangerous territory because there are no maps in the wild. Only the practice of navigating uncertainty without attempting to control it. In the wild, we have friends. In the gray, we have followers. In the wild, rather than being the loudest voice in asserting that one knows the truth, we take a step back from such assertions. We listen to what was said and we ask questions in order to get on the same page with both our pre-friends and our pre-foes. In the gray, however, we have telepathy. We are gifted at inferring from the indicators of the words someone uses, the people they associate with, and the true names of the subjects we discuss, that we are literally able to read each other's minds. We interrupt, uninterested in wild language, because it is an inefficient method compared to telepathy. We know what you are about to say, and we will respond accordingly. Additionally, we are so gifted at being empaths today, after many years of practice, that we can even tell when you need to have something explained to you, whether or not you need help, and what kind of help it is that you need. We are so good at anticipating your needs that we will fulfill them before you even need to ask. There is no need for questions here in the gray, you see, because with telepathy, our vessels are already full. Who could ask for more? Wild ones, we invite you to shed off the pain of your emotional vulnerability. The practice of telepathy will protect you from such unpredictability, will allow you to transform society based on the results of your new abilities as a mind reader, cultivate civilizations based on friend and foe, and offer the kind of non-mutual aid no one ever asked for. Damn, it feels good to be a medium.
What's new this week? Greek anarchists fighting ISIS in Syria speaks out. Video. From mainstream source, The Greek Reporter by Tassos Kokkinidis. This is a very brief text, mostly announcing a new documentary on fighting ISIS in Syria. In this case, through the lens of a Greek anarchist who has been fighting in Raqqa. The reporter, if you can call them that, is funny. Quote, the Greek volunteer says that his family's communist background made him want to defend the weak. His upbringing made him an internationalist. He says, in our home, we never had the Greek flag, he says, although he denies he is anti-Greek, unquote. The video in Greek is no longer available, which is too bad.
Berlin, Germany. Incendiary actions against Telekom, Deutsche Bahn, and Vodafone. From Chronic, translated to English through Mpolothia, submitted by Anon. Communiques can be super brief. This happened. Laudatory. We did this. Explanatory. We did this thing, and this is why. And or poetic. The things. This one out of Berlin is explanatory and clear, a model of its type, quote, restructuring power via digitization, quote, restructuring power via digitization is in full swing. Hardly anything that cannot be complemented by a smart in its name, and thus a new place in this world, has escaped this process. Everything is networked. Cameras, sensors, and chips are constantly sending and letting things communicate. Big data is the currency of tomorrow. Even our relationships, actions, and thinking are permanently exposed to digital access. Reduced information, we feed the algorithms of the machines, helping to make the future manageable and controllable, unquote.
Total solidarity for Yücel and all anarchist prisoners in Yogyakarta. Posted by Anarchist BC. This is a barely decipherable message of solidarity with Yücel, Oza, and Azwar, anarchists who were imprisoned as a result of May 1st actions in Indonesia, and a communique about a banner made to support, in particular, Yücel, with no information about why Yücel is different from the others. Quote, some of our comrades were arrested and discriminated against during the celebration. They are Yücel, Oza, Azwar, who is still being held in Maplestra, Yogyakarta, who will be transferred to Sibonggan prison on June 29th, unquote.
Anarchist unions to rally across four countries to drop J20 from its going down. An announcement about many actions on Monday, July 2nd, protesting the charges against the remaining J20 defendants and those arrested at Standing Rock, deportation policies, and all the bad things. Also a lot of solidarity call-outs. Quote, We also stand in solidarity with Native water protectors facing years in prison in the wake of Standing Rock, and Black liberation demonstrators being threatened with trumped-up charges in Ferguson and Charlotte. We are living through an escalating wave of repression that aims to silence all resistance. And an injury to one is an injury to all. Unquote.
Report back from the first rally for Antoine Rose, originally from torchlight.noblogs.org. A brief first-person account of the first rally after the killing of unarmed Antoine Rose as he ran from the police. Quote, "Nobody seemed very well prepared, including the cops, but I guess that's not surprising. I saw a couple of green legal observer hats, but no marked medics. A few people were there in Black Bloc, but in my opinion, that wasn't a great place for a bloc. They stood out more than if they had just worn regular clothes. The cops were mostly hands-off. The Allegheny County cops showed up, but they didn't bring their horses. Nobody was in riot gear. The only crowd control weapons I saw were these assault-looking rifles that I think fire rubber bullets. Some cops from Monroeville had those, but they put them away pretty early. Except for the SUV incident, they didn't seem to be doing anything to provoke people." Unquote.
Hamburg, Germany, attack on Russian visa center. From Contra Info. A brief communique on a window smash and spray paint outing, quote, "Since autumn 2017, there have been repressive attacks against anarchists in different Russian cities, in Belarus and in Crimea. With torture, intimidation, blackmail, and imprisonment, they are targeted," unquote.
No cops in Pride. From conflictmn.blackblogs.org. A report back on an anti-cop segment in the Minneapolis Pride March, which the author claims was successful as far as it went, but perhaps could go further in the future. Quote, "However, this is also not a call for an abstract militancy. This is about posing a question. To all of us who reject this world, how can we ourselves bring about a better world? Starting from what we have, our skills, resources, and most importantly, our friends, we can build a reality where no cops in Pride isn't a demand, but a warning. But first, we'll have to toss off the activist rituals we've become accustomed to." Unquote.
Call for submissions to Class Dismissed from Anonymous. A call for writings, etc. from anarchists who have not gone to, quote, post-secondary, unquote, which I presume means not having gone to school after some equivalent of high school. Goddamn Canadians. The submissions are for a zine, probably one-off, called Class Dismissed, which is the best, most apt play on words I've heard in a long time. Some of the suggestions for topics are, quote, "stories and reflections on the ways in which not going to school has shaped your politics, experience, and identity as anarchist. How folks came to identify as anarchists outside of school and find others in the first place, and what they've been doing since. How folks like to go about sharpening their strategies in politics and sharing political knowledge outside of prescripted teacher-student or classroom-style models. How we have shared this stuff with other folks in our lives who are in the same or similar boats that break free of the teacher-student mold," unquote.
Hamilton. Keeping our guard up and moving ahead. From North Shore Counter Info. This is a list of directions to beginning good security process. One does wonder if the misspelling of wary, W-A-R-Y, as weary, W-E-A-R-Y, is a Freudian slip. Step 3, quote, "Don't give in to the hype. Work through the fear. House raids, arrests, media stunts, and police visits are scary. They're meant to intimidate. State repression is intended not only to publicly penalize some, but to scare others into submission and to tear movements apart. That's why it's important to keep things in perspective and not give in to the hype. To talk about the situation with people you trust and prepare for it without letting fear take over." Unquote.
North Carolina, USA, solidarity with the Harrisburg action in ACAB, from Contra Info. Very short communique. Quote, "Amidst the early morning fog of the 22nd of June, we immobilized and sprayed up multiple pieces of heavy construction equipment along US 220 in North Carolina. An excavator, a bulldozer, and a number of front loaders all tasted exquisite venom by way of maple syrup and bleach. Fire extinguishers on site were also rendered useless. This tiny attack was taken against the proposed construction of Mountain Valley Pipeline Southgate. as well as the destruction of numerous acres of forest and the clearing of the new I-840 corridor, unquote.
Positively Keyless Street, from Fifth Estate by Bill Weinberg. Reminiscences and comparisons of punk and anarchist scenes in Lima, Peru, touching on the 80s and 90s, but mostly about the last 5 years or so. Quote, when dictatorship briefly returned in 1992 as President Alberto Fujimori declared his self-coup, suspending Congress and the Constitution, Quilca had been a rare outpost of open defiance. After democracy was restored a second time and Fujimori was put on trial for corruption and ghastly human rights abuses, El Averno pressed the question. Rodriguez recalls murals and concerts openly opposed to Fujimori. The demise of El Averno is the bitter fruit of Lima's quote-unquote recovery. With stability restored, property values are rising, and disputed titles are being cleared up. Space for alternative culture is fast shrinking, unquote.
Building Autonomous Power, Radical Struggle in Philadelphia, by Art Burbridge, from RadicalEducationDepartment.com, which embraces their initials and calls itself, quote, an autonomous collective training cultural warriors for a radical internationalist left, unquote. Yay. Quote, we confront a shattered revolutionary left. Since the counter-revolution of the 70s and 80s, we have been slowly rebuilding mass resistance. We are still experimenting with ways to connect the vast array of class, racial, and gender struggles within durable and revolutionary mass movements. These experiments include the anti-nuclear movement of the 1980s, the global justice movement, and the anti-Iraq war movement, and Occupy. Important movements of our development, but they were each deeply limited in their own way. They were unable to create the solution to the far left's crisis of organizing, the crisis of collective, large-scale, long-term power, unquote.
New poster series, Police Everywhere, Justice Nowhere, from CrimeThink, a series of five posters that connect the current J20 arrestees to police violence in general, and also puts faces to some of them. People like faces.
The term Black Group, working group for anti-electoralism in Indonesia, from galangahitam.noblogs.org, a site in Indonesian. This brief text introduces a new anti-voting, anti-state group in Indonesia. Quote, this is an expression of civil disobedience to delegitimize the current power structures and assert our autonomy. We will continue to campaign for the ideas of anarchism, anti-authoritarianism, anti-electoralism, anti-parliamentarianism, and anti-state philosophies. However, we wish to differentiate ourselves from the terrorists who oppose the current state in order to build a religious state. Rather, we wish to eliminate the state altogether, unquote.
Submissions for New Anarchist Vegan Straight Edge Journal, from Anonymous. Quote, searching for essay submissions related to anti-civ anarchist critiques of psychiatry, mental illness, and medication, non-primitivist critiques of civilization, thoughts on anarchy beyond leftism towards savage attack, anti-civ straight edge critiques of intoxication culture, nihilist anarchist vegan critiques of speciesism and anthropocentrism, post-left anarchist critiques of the recent wave of de Kooninist, the Invisible Committee popularity within radical circles, post-left anarchist critiques of leftism, anarcho-communism in particular, anti-civ queer nihilist critiques of gender and of queer as part of LGBTQ, etc., nihilist anarchist attacks slash communiques against infrastructure in America, if any, armed self-defense, and finally, rewilding, unquote. I guess it's the zeitgeist.
Solarpunk and Anarchist Infrapolitics, from Freedom News UK, by Connor Owens. This article from Freedom News UK is anomalous in my experience. Not only does it introduce me to solarpunk, a term that is relevant to me, shock number one, but it revisits the tired lifestyleist versus activist debate and comes down on the side of rejecting the dualism, which is not new, except we're talking about Freedom News here. The staid stockbroker, uncle of the current anarchy, quote, cyberpunk imagines a future gone wrong, taking as its premise the evolution of current society and technology down a dark path full of pollution, corporate domination, and killer robots. Steampunk imagines a past gone right, taking with its premise of the evolution of Victorian society and technology down a bright path full of adventure, anti-imperialism, and sky pirates. Solarpunk takes the same reimagining approach as steampunk, attempting to demonstrate a set of what-if scenarios and bright alternative paths society and technology could take. Instead of the industrialist-imperialist wreck that we got at the tail end of the 1800s, but like cyberpunk, it focuses on a theoretical future instead of the past, unquote. Unhappily, this is an oversell, demonstrated by the lack of titles or authors who are writing such fiction. And of course, he ends up referring to Book Chen and Jesse Cohen. But this is a beautiful dream while it lasted.
Defying Power from C4SS by Peter Gelderloos. This is part two of a conversation with William Gillis, which Gelderloos, at least, takes on in good faith. While the writing that Gelderloos does under his own name is frequently the least exciting writing he does, here his ability to move slowly and clearly around ideas is perfectly placed, as such conversations require just that kind of patience and explicitness, explication, clarity. Quote, by valuing people according to an unending list of abilities and qualities, a good singer, a good cook, a good hunter, a good mechanic, a good mediator, a good connector, a good healer, a good fighter, a good midwife, a good translator, we can live a fuller life with more paths to self-actualization, and we prevent any one kind of power from having undue influence over the others. We could formalize many of these roles, or not, but it requires constant effort to prevent the emergence of a calcified value hierarchy that would heap disproportionate rewards on some kinds of status and forget about others. And constant effort over multiple generations usually means ritualization and inclusion within a society's mythos. Unquote. Perhaps Bellamy and Gelderloos will start a new wave of careful writing.
Media. The colors of the parallel world now available online from Pramen. This is an online book by an ex-prisoner in Belarus, and it's a solid 172 pages in the English translation. I didn't have a chance to read this carefully, but what I did see didn't have much in the way of anarchist analysis. My model for that continues to be Bonanno's excellent Locked Up. However, this provides a real service to the extent that all anarchists should be as prepared as possible for prison and jail time. And this book goes into detail about the daily routines, conflict, personalities, and sabotages of prison life. Most of what I saw applies well enough to the U.S. to be relevant, and this is well worth reading. I will just add, although it always feels tacky and presumptuous to do so, that the translation is not great, but that is a small flaw easily mended, and the pictures are good. Quote, this is how the fight with the main enemies of the correctional process, sweaters and track jackets, looked. It's autumn or spring, it's cold outside. The cons go out to work in the industry area and wait for a search at the checkpoint. Everyone is searched in turns and forced to unbutton the costume. If there is a track jacket or a sweater under it, you must go back to the dorm and take it off. No matter that it's 10 degrees above zero outside and you just have a light t-shirt under your costume. No matter that after such a search, cons will shiver from the cold the whole day, and half the section will run off to the infirmary with a cold or the flu. Any authorities who visit the pen will be contented because the order of dress is observed. Unquote.
Anarchist Wallpaper Number 4. Don't move for the rich, fight gentrification. From Contra Info, a single-page broadsheet for posting widely, with text about how bad gentrification is and three steps for filling fire extinguishers with paint for graffiti fun. I haven't tested the steps, so I'm not sure if they're thorough enough, but the spirit is there. Quote, the variety of enemies is big, but this provides different opportunities for attack and creates targets for a dynamic intervention. If we are repressed everywhere by state and capital, we can strike everywhere. It's not necessary to wait for a mass uprising. We won't be kicked down any longer. From now on, we'll kick back. Unquote.
Anathema, Volume 4, Issue 6. 8 pages of Philly thought and activity, including what went down. Actions from vandalism to sabotage to arrest. Amazon Watch. That's the company, not the river or the woman warrior. A summer against prisons on July days of solidarity against prisons, stop the raids on anti-homeless actions by the city, info on ICE abductions, on valuing property over people, two pages on the legacy of the Green Scare and eco-terrorism as a threat to America, and anti-anarchist repression in Canada. Quote, those to whom you're closest are just as capable of informing on you as anyone else. Marius Mason is serving 22 years in prison because his ex-husband and co-defendant snitched. Walter Bond is in prison for 12 years because his brother wore a wire in order to implicate him and collect reward money, unquote. Sobering.
Eukaryot, Issue 2, Politics of Ecstasy, from Eukaryot, Counter-Propaganda Cell. This is an essay from an online pamphlet with a very nice woodcut image. The other essays are a preamble called Does Radical Ecstasy Thrive in the Shadow of the Phallus? The Unbearable Docility of Bourgeois Ecstasy, and Martyrdom or the Solar Phallus. I will be suggesting this for my reading group. Quote, must we stop obsessing about how faithfully our anti-authoritarian practices conform to certain ideological principles and instead try to understand how they produce moments of exaltation, of quote-unquote ecstasy? Looking at our battlegrounds through the lens of ecstasy lights up shifting visions and narratives. While the regulation image of us decked in our best principles might appear unblemished, most of us writing for this issue have found the image of us stripped down to our ecstasies less flattering. So much for our plans to destabilize capitalism with our seismic passions. At the moment, our ecstasies are adding cement to its foundations. Unquote.
I am action. Praxedes Guerrero, 1882-1910. From Black Rose Federation. This is biographical information about, and some of the writings of, a contemporary of the Magones, a significant figure apparently in the Mexican Revolutionary Movement. Quote, we must arm ourselves, not using the useless vote that will always be worth only as much as a tyrant wants, but rather with effective and less naive weapons, whose utilization will bring us ascendant evolution instead of the regressive one praised by the pacifist activist. Unquote.
Audio. The Final Straw Radio. Voices from the Balkan Route, Rojava, and the ZAD. From The Final Straw, an hour and 7 minutes. This episode includes three segments, one with an anarchist who just came back from Rojava, one from a project at the ZAD, and one talking to people who do work on the border of Croatia and Bosnia in the Balkans. This project, The Final Straw, continues to grow and get better and stays fresh, which is amazing given that it's basically just two people who have been doing it for years. There is no Sean Swain in this episode.
June 2018, Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, Episode 12. UK's Dissident Island Radio reports on the far-right demonstrations. UK's Dissident Island Radio reports on far-right demonstrations and other local news. The Final Straw Radio from the US interviews a comrade from Yogyakarta, Indonesia. Regarding the riots on May Day, Radio Zone's subversive expression from Greece gives us an update on political prisoners. Radio Caruf from the Chilean region talks about feminist actions, and A-Radio Berlin tells about the plans for and struggle against the Google campus in Berlin.
Black and Green Podcast, Episode 9, June 4th, 2018, an hour and 10 minutes. Monsanto's insane climate field view, social work, automation and automatons, Barbara Ehrenreich's new book, Natural Causes, growing up a Zionist and writing a book about Christian missionaries, and readings from Freddie Perlman.
Suffering.
Topic of the week, anarchists' work. For most anarchists, at least in North America, work plays some role in our lives. While there are still anarchists who elevate work as a, or sometimes the, terrain on which our battles will be waged, and presumably won, many anarchists are sometimes between critical and antagonistic to the concept of work. To be clear, this is hardly a new or groundbreaking development in the spheres of anarchist thinking, but often it comes down to conversations about to work or not to work, or what are more and less legitimate fields of employment for anarchists to enter into. I assume the answer to the first is not if you don't have to, and to the second, there are less but probably not more legitimate jobs. Instead, I'm curious about What are the ways that anarchists inject anarchy into their work lives, either in their workplace struggles or just as an effort to disrupt the normal flow of business? Do they show open hostility to the higher ups? What are the benefits, since the pitfalls are pretty glaringly obvious? Do you work to foster more decentralized or at least less hierarchical decision-making and relationships? For those who find themselves in positions where open actions are not viable, do you find ways of inserting moments of anarchist absurdity into the mix? What happens when the boss catches on? For example, I have worked places that were very accepting of me being openly an anarchist, but were rigidly hierarchical, and places with strict lines of authority where sometimes the bosses thought my meager moments of resistance were hilarious and even encouraged them. Most often, it is somewhere between those. How does your anarchy keep you sane or allow you to navigate your jobby job? Or perhaps, maybe I should ask, does it?
Well, I have a pretty clear line when it comes to work, which is that it, that basically I think that the things I do for love, i.e. anarchy, and the things I do to live in this world, i.e. a job, I try to keep them very separate as possible, and I try to keep as firm and black of a line between the two as possible. So that means that I don't encourage other people to do good jobs, like jobs where you care for people for money. And I mean, I more or less accept some of the premise that is articulated in the Underhill zine, The Anarchist Banker. Now, The Anarchist Banker is clearly like sort of absurd. But actually, when I talk about this topic, I often talk about this ridiculous movie that that I still think is rather poignant, and that's this movie called Salt Lake City Punk, SLC Punk. At the very end of it, basically, the protagonist asks exactly this question, right? Which is basically like, what is selling out? And what is it? What does selling out mean when you don't believe in the way in which you sell out? And, you know, what does it mean to be an anarchist lawyer, banker, you know, stock analyst? And so, as most people know, I work in the tech industry. And when I work a jobby job, I basically don't try to inflict anarchy upon the job at all.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, at least in like terms of the jobs that I've had, usually I find I have very little capacity to do anything. And to the extent that that would just make it more difficult for me to live my life and have a wage and be able to pay rent and so on and so forth, which is what I need to do in order to be able to live the life that I want in Montreal or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me like it seems like very limited the amount, the capacity that you could actually do things. But actually, that is like from a perspective of like, I don't know, I don't exist in a particularly syndicalist environment where, I don't know, people are trying to like unionize their jobs or so on and so forth. Most of the jobs I've had, it would just be like, I couldn't possibly see the point of like even trying to do that. Like, what possible good could come out of that?
Yeah, and so really this is a conversation on some level about like, to what extent is work like a position? And, you know, a lot of anarchists believe that to the extent to which work is a position, they just want to do something that, you know, that they can stand doing and that doesn't sort of add horribleness to the world. And, you know, and while I do disagree with that, I don't disagree strongly. Like, you know, I think it's nice that people are doulas and nurses and school teachers and all the rest. I just wouldn't want to do those things as a job because they pay shit and you know, you get treated like shit and they're incredibly bureaucratic. I have a good friend that's a school teacher and it's just terrifying how much bureaucracy and paperwork and testing they have to do in their like day to day.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that, like, I think that the Crime Think book Work has a pretty good position when it comes to this. Basically, I think at one point it argues any type of position that you take in the sort of the economy has, like, trade-offs. And I don't know. I guess that's something that's sort of, like, kind of I've carried with me or whatever, which on the one hand, thinking about, like, to a large degree, you probably don't have that much control over, like, I mean, you have some capacity to make some choices about, I don't know, what kind of job you want to do, if you want to get some kind of education, if you want to, like, take some risks on, I don't know, pursuing a particular path or whatever. But each of these paths is going to have a lot of limitations that are built into it. There's no, like, perfect job. Yeah, And I don't know, to the extent that you maybe want to do like certain other things, I'm definitely worrying whenever I see people like getting really, really caught in their jobs. And I've myself gotten caught in my job a few times where it's like, I don't know. I mean, depending on how shit your job is, but like can really, I don't know, negate any possibility for you to live any kind of anarchist life because you're just like so, I don't know, rooted into that particular way of like, you know, reproducing yourself in this world.
It is worth reflecting on the idea that the way in which work is being talked about, you know, it really does come from the ultra left, or like, it doesn't really come exactly from the anarchist space, but it comes from the broader ultra left. And that was actually the funny thing about reading the book Work. You know, Bob Black, to the extent to which he sort of wrote the piece that everyone talks about when they talk about not wanting to work, you know, his attitude was very punk and very much that it was an anarchist text. Whereas Work was almost like a reversion to like an ultra-left communist position. I was very entertained by that book just for that reason of it being like, you know, basically very dry, very heady in terms of intellectually heady, rather than Bob Black's essay, you know, which is the very definition of sort of like an impractical, you know, denunciation against the world.
I mean, I don't know if I've like ever like read, I think it's like a very interesting thing, like, because there are the two aspects of this. There's the very sort of the kind of like top down kind of perspective on work that we, you know, work is like a thing that like, you know, fuels the system that like, you know, covers the world and so on and so forth. And then there's the subjective level of just like what it is to like have a fucking, I don't know, a job in some shitty call center in Halifax or something. So like for that, a thing that I thought was very, very interesting was something that existed like definitely with like a punk aesthetic, and which was actually distributed on a bus line in Halifax. Like the bus, like, you know, drove past like a lot of like sort of major call centers, in I guess like more suburban areas of the city, like old malls, which at this point are mostly call centers, which is a major industry in that area. And just like, you know, I don't know, like kind of just scribblings, like, you know, talking about hating work, all of the ways that we're being fucked over in this particular way. I don't really know. I don't really have much to say about it in like thinking about it now. But I don't know. That's something that I always appreciated, I guess.
You appreciated the fact that there was a campaign in Halifax on bus lines against call centers?
Yeah, it was mostly because it was funny. Like, they got, like, hate mail at a certain points, like, and then they published the hate mail, and it was all very amusing. I feel like this is, like, at least in terms, I don't know if, like, inspiration is really the word, but, I mean, in terms of, like, a way to engage with this fucking misery, it seemed pretty funny because, like, the people who were making this happen, printing the zine, distributing it for free on the bus line, soliciting, I don't know, responses from whatever random ass person is on the fucking bus. It's kind of funny. I had very little to do with, I think, like, you know, any kind of level of like things that I actually think are not entirely hopeless in all contexts, but like, I don't know, trying to unionize, get better wages, whatever, that kind of thing, which I don't know. I don't see anarchy coming out of that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I like much, it's just like cooler. I don't know. That's like a thing that like, at least from my sort of perspective, not having a lot of power, and very rarely perceiving myself as having a whole lot of power. I don't know. It's cooler.
And so you're someone who sort of is a meta-anarchist in that you do seem to spend a lot of time, political time, associating with currents that are not exactly anarchist. Do you feel like work is a useful mechanism in terms of engaging with other tendencies like communist tendencies or whomever? Or do you feel like work is entirely the mainstay of the anarchist space and no one else is really that compelled by it?
I mean, I think when it comes to, I don't know if I would agree that like I have very much to do with like engaging with other tendencies, really. It seems to me that like one of the major things that actually would frustrate me a lot, like in terms of like places that I've worked in, when it comes to like, I'm going to stare at the floor, but when it comes to fucking, I don't know, thinking about my own workplace, I I mean, I generally speaking, I have like nothing in common with other people. I can see this being the case with like other people. Like, I can't imagine working with someone as ideological as like your average Marxist type person in any kind of campaign. I myself am like too ideological to like deal with people who, I don't know, have like, in my own context, I usually have to deal with like lots of racist opinions about Muslims being voiced all the time by, I don't know, Quebecois proles who've been concerned, like, you know, made to be afraid of this kind of thing, who like, you know, just working this kind of job. It's like, where would I begin a kind of conversation with these people towards like, I don't know.
Like, you mean in terms of perfecting them?
No, not in terms of perfecting them, just in terms of like being able to like stand to work with them for a second to maybe like, I don't know, put pressure on the boss or whatever. And usually it's just like not going to be something that I think, like, again, unless you really have like a mentality that you really want to like go out and like, I don't know, change the world and so on and so forth. Like, but if you're like a person like me who like has a position in the economy of just, you know, generally speaking, you're just going to go to whatever job seems like easiest to have at any given moment. I think that that's like a position that like at least seems to me like the majority of anarchists are like floating in as well, being kind of like precarious workers, don't have that much in the way of skills, probably like a little bit overeducated, probably in a liberal arts sort of degree.
Sure.
This just like, it seems to me that like it's very difficult to think about like work being like any kind of place for actual struggle to like happen in a way, like unless you're really, really dedicated to that. And again, I know some people who are more on that tip, probably in the Wobblies, probably, I don't know, think about that all the time, but that's not so much me. And I feel like it's actually, like, I mean, again, like, I think I'm a little bit more capable than some of dealing with people who, I don't know, who you're going to meet in a workplace who probably don't have opinions as you do.
But part of the idea of this is that to talk about work and being against work is a really different conversation than most Marxist conversations. In other words, it's more, it's less jargony, it's simpler.
Yeah. Sorry, do you want to say, like, what do you mean exactly?
Well, if I say most jobs are shit and we shouldn't do them, that lets everyone off the hook.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's, like, the situation is that we are in a situation where most of us have to work a job. Or, I don't know. It is kind of like letting people off the hook a little bit. I mean, there are different ways to like survive in this economy. But this is, again, where I think like actually at least, I don't know, I think like in a lot of the details, one could disagree with like work in particular for it being like dry, that book, the Vi Crime thing. But like the overall point is that like every single way that you engage with the economy is going to have its trade-offs. So like, again, like, for example, I was on welfare for a number of years. And kind of like really actually geared my life, like moving to a province where it would be easier to be on welfare than the province in which I grew up. You know, really trying to like hustle into like, you know, living in extremely cramped, like living situations at times, organizing my entire day so that I would be able to like, you know, get free meals and that kind of thing, as much as possible. And that has a lot of trade-offs. Whereas, I don't know, a thing that I did more recently, which was like working a job that I was able to get that was like, you know, paid relatively well, that had like its own trade-offs, and that I like, you know, was pretty miserable and actually like had like a lot less time to do things that were interesting to me and so on and so forth. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's like a matter of like, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't think like the answer is like everyone should get on welfare. I don't think that the answer is everyone should just kill themselves so that they don't have to like, you know, participate in the economy either. It's just, there's not really any solution that is easy to like how to engage with this nightmare world that we're forced into and which has like, you know, is going to try and put us towards like some kind of productive purpose or otherwise let us die.
Thank you very much for this conversation.
No problem.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel. written by Jackie, narrated by Chisel and a friend. The editorial was written by Rosinante. The commentary was written and spoken by Suds. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.
Be my only, only. I can see.